You're listening to Around Comics, episode 268, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and C2E2. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are in the area, you should certainly drop by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here. Let me get you introduced to this week's panel. First of all, you know him as the voice of Word Balloon. He is our good buddy, Mr. John Suntress.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, John.
How are you? Good
You're
to see
videotaping
you
me again.
Well, we're
during the introduction.
You know, we're dwindling down, so we've got to capture these last final moments.
It's the Around Comics time capsule.
It's for posterity.
We're
absolutely.
We're going to take your Droid phone there and throw it into a time capsule.
It's a BlackBerry, sir.
Oh, okay.
I say that with minority pride as the least functional of these smartphones.
Wow, we have exactly 10,000 applications as opposed to the 100,000 of Apple and 62,000 of Droid phones.
Early adopter.
I know, I fucked up.
I fucked up. Like I said.
Our next guest is a returning guest, but not returning enough. And you promised me you were coming by, and you came through on your promise.
It only took like a year.
It is the incredibly talented Miss Jenny Frizzin.
Yay!
Jenny, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, really. What the hell am I doing taking shots at Chris, for Christ's
sake? Yeah, really.
Take a shot at the pretty person, exactly.
Yeah. Boy, I'm never the pretty one at the table, especially tonight. Oh, especially
nice.
Tonight.
Nice.
But, Kyle, you're very pretty.
Yeah, he's a manly man.
Yikes.
our other guest tonight, also an incredibly talented artist, also a return guest to the show, Mr. Kyle Dice.
Thank you, Sarah. Yay. It's good to be here.
It is good to have
and,
you.
And I brought Jenny tonight.
Yeah, it happened.
Nice.
It's true.
I had to make it happen.
There you go. It's like, you're like, I'm not going alone. Come with me, period. All right, before we jump in here with lots of good comics and comics culture talk, I want to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is brought to you by InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, omnibus editions, absolute editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free, including our book club selection. It's the last Around Comics book club. Moment of silence. But it is one of my true guilty pleasures
Hit
from
Monkey,
my childhood.
Right?
It is not Hitmonkey.
Damn. I thought for sure it'd be Hitmonkey.
It is the Alien Legion Omnibus Volume 1. Which,
that's good.
The awesome collection from Dark Horse.
Is that Chuck writing that?
No, that is
Chuck Dixon?
Carl Potts.
Cool.
I'm trying to think of all the people involved in it. It was a long list of folks. We should grab it. It's up there.
That's awesome.
It's a big old list of people.
All right. You had me at Carl Potts.
You know, it's one of those, it's funny because I don't have like this deep ingrained recollection of who wrote or drew it because I loved it at an age when I didn't care who the writer or who the artist was. It was just awesome stories. So it doesn't resonate with me as much as like Byrne Claremont X-Men.
Okay.
But it's fantastic, fantastic first omnibus, and they just announced the second omnibus will be coming out, I think, in May. But the first one is available in stock trades for 45% off the cover.
Cool.
All right, there you go. Good friends, thank you for joining us in our march to the end, our march to the sea of Around Comics. Baton Death March of Comic Podcast. Which reminds me, we had not had a set schedule on what our last recording dates are going to be. Obviously tonight, our next recording will be Friday, March 5th. And then 2 weeks after that, Friday, March 19th, will be our last recording here in Dark Tower. So if you're in the Chicago area and you wanna take in one of the last recordings, those are the dates. And we record on those Fridays at 7:30. So
very cool.
All right, there you go.
All right.
Well, hey, let's talk about some comics.
Sounds good.
Excellent, man.
And then I know we've got some. I know we've got some big DC news that we're going to jump into a little bit later. But it's been a great month for comic books, and we actually haven't talked about single issues here for a little bit. So I wanted to bring a couple to your all's attention. You know what? I'm gonna jump in with one I've been harping on. If you're listening to the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast, I had a nice talk with Sterling Gates and Jamal Igle a couple weeks ago about Supergirl number 50, and boy, did they deliver. It was a lot of fun.
It was a great issue, and also a very good interview.
And, well, thank you. I appreciate good that. Well, it's easy whenever you have guys like that to talk to. Supergirl 50 came out. It was their big milestone issue. It had kind of a hefty cover price of $4.99, but it was 40 pages, chock full of good story and great art. There's even in the backup story was co-written by Helen Slater, the real life Supergirl. Real life film Supergirl and Jake Black, who you may not know the name, but if you buy the Eagle Moss lead statues, he's the guy that writes, I guess, the majority of the magazines that come with the Eagle Moss statues, which are great character bios. If you want to know the history of Bizarro, go and get the Eagle Moss figure.
I do want that.
And then you get the magazine, which has the entire history and, you know, who the characters that are tied to him. So Jake Black wrote that backup with art by Cliff Chang, which, hey, come on, Cliff Chang. I'm not gonna spoil this mightily. I'll just say that if you are not reading Supergirl, you're missing out, because in my opinion, it takes a lot for me to say this because of how big a Greg Rucka fan I am, and I really am liking the stuff that he's doing in Action. This is my favorite Superman family title right now. Supergirl is really good right now.
Is 50 a good issue to jump in on?
You know, you can. It's one of those, either go back and read the last, you know, 40 issues of the World of New Krypton stuff to get really, really into it.
Yeah.
But it is written in such a way that you can jump into this and you'll get the story pretty quickly.
Okay.
And there are just great moments in it. You want to check it out? Yeah. Another neat thing is that it has a Michael Turner cover.
That's what I was looking at.
Great story, and if you would listen to this on the Don't Miss show, I guess Sterling Gates, the writer of the series, had gone to his editors and asked if there was any unpublished Michael Turner work that they could use in this issue, because Michael Turner was really instrumental in bringing the character back, you know, in Batman Superman.
Yeah.
And so I guess his editors went to Dan DiDio and asked that question. He's like, well, I've got this. And he literally pulled a framed piece of art that Michael Turner had done and given DiDio as a gift, and said, well, I have this. If we clear it with the Turner estate, I'm sure that we could use this. And so the cover for Supergirl 50 was actually a gift that Michael Turner had given.
That's
to
cool.
Dan DiDio.
That's very, really nice.
Very neat story.
The great thing about, I think, the Supergirl team, the current Supergirl team, is that it finally brought some clarity to the character. And I think after a lot of misfires when this series began, because of different creative changes and editorial decisions of where they wanted to take the Superman books in general, there were just a lot of misfires.
It just seemed like it could never get its footing.
No, other than really when Jeff Loeb and Mike Turner did the Superman Batman story representing Kara back properly to the current continuity.
It was like 7 years ago.
Was it that long?
It's like 7 years ago, man.
Wow.
Because, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, that was the last time that it kind of made sense. You know, Loeb started on the book, had to go because he left DC.
Mm-hmm.
Rucka started on the book. They decided that Rucka had too many books, and they took it away from him. So, you know, I mean, it really was a hot potato of a book for a long time.
I think he gladly surrendered.
Yeah, but, you know, and I know you've commented on another book like that, Brave and Bold, where finally things settled down. You've got a quality team on there. Straczynski's writing great stories, and there's clarity to the book, and you can now, after all these misfires, you're back to a semblance of normalcy on the book. And obviously the same goes for Supergirl. And really, I know both of these guys, Sterling and Jamal.
They love doing it.
They love Supergirl. They love Lana Lang. She's a big player in this book, which is great. And I think it is a very good story that they've been following during the World of New Krypton. I haven't had the problems that I've heard some of you guys have on the other podcasts that you
11 o'clock.
Yeah. And I think it's been a very sprawling, interesting story. I think they've taken the whole Superman family into a very interesting status quo that we all knew would wrap up soon. And, you know, this War of the Supermen is coming. You know, it's been on the wall ever since 100,000, you know, Kandorians suddenly became full size and had the powers of Superman.
Well, I think what you have with the Superman family of books is what you run into with a lot of, I don't want to say company-wide events, but family-wide events, where it's this relay toss, and it has to be very synchronized, and it's like, okay, well, this story in this title is lagging behind by two issues. Well, okay, now we need to spread this one out for a couple issues.
Have we had that kind of lateness inconsistency where things kind of drag?
Not really lateness. I think it's a matter of getting the synchronicity. You know, it's like where the handoffs need to be at the right time. So I think that looking at this is like, okay, well, this story isn't going to wrap up for 6 months. And so I guess we're going to have to stretch this one a little bit. And that's been the criticism on the World of New Krypton stuff, or the New Krypton, because World was its own title, is that there has been a little bit of padding in it in some stories that have probably drug on an issue or two long. I've enjoyed all of it.
Well, and I was going to say, I honestly just didn't feel that way. I think in the Superman book, and I can appreciate the complaint that, you know, Mon-El is the lead in Superman, even though the title is Superman.
But I have no problem with that.
And you got Nightwing and Flamebird in action, and you've got Superman World of New Krypton in that book, and then Supergirl. I think the Superman World of New Krypton story has been great, and I haven't felt that lag that I heard some other people complain about. I think they're really fleshing the world out and explaining how the world works when it comes to their form of government, how they conduct a murder mystery, you know, I mean, how the military works, how the slave caste works and everything, the worker caste. I think I really think they've fleshed this world out. And also, it's going to be interesting because everyone is expecting this, you know, end of the War of the Supermen that's coming. And I hope they don't end with a typical kind of reset button status quo. I think
it's kind of cool having, you know, 100,000 Kryptonians running around out there.
And what was so out of fashion when Byrne took over Superman back in 85 and that there was too much, you know, continuity and too many Kryptonians and... You know, you had to know about Van Z and all the other, like, Kandorians as much as you had to know about what was going on with Superman itself. I welcome all that stuff back. Yeah. I think, you know, after 25 years, it's fine to bring all that stuff back, bring out all the toys.
Oh, yeah. As long as it's introduced well, and I think that James Robinson is very good at doing that.
You know, and what's frustrating, and I don't mean to be negative, but as clear of a vision that James and Rucka and Sterling and these guys that are running Superman have for the Superman books... Man, I am telling you, two issues into Justice League, it is driving me crazy because I want to like this new team. I want to get excited. I've, you know, read the first two issues. I've got the current issue in front of me here, 42. And it's better than...
Don't overthink it. Just make it a Justice League book.
It, you know, I have to kind of agree, though, from a layout standpoint, it was a little frustrating where it's not even the usual thing that I think guys like Bendis introduced in Powers, where you're going across, you know, a double page and reading, you know, horizontally, and that both pages are really one big page, and it's kind of a widescreen kind of presentation. Yeah. It's quasi, and I even want to, like, get to it to even, like, explain it.
We've talked about it in World of New Krypton. I've been reading comic books for 25 years. Whenever I have trouble following a page layout, there's an issue.
You need arrows.
I'm old hat at this.
You literally need arrows to kind of understand. I mean, it's like...
I was reading some old, like, 70s Legion comics. They had arrows in there. I loved it.
I don't know if this is page 7 or 8, but you start off up on the top. You go to the other, you know, you start on the left page, and it's that first big giant panel, and then you go to the top of the right page that's, you know, open as well, but it's literally only the first row of the right page. And then you go down again, and it's like, and it's like, put some goddamn arrows in there, would you please? I'm sorry, and I love Mark Bagley, he's a wonderful artist, everything looks good, there are tons of really cool cameos from great old DC characters, and I won't tip it for people who maybe haven't read it yet. And I want to like this story, and I do think it's an improvement from the same malaise that I think people were saying about the Superman books. I think you can say about how they were treating the Justice League during Blackest Night. But things are better. I think that, you know, they just need to... Well, let's go. Let's go.
As much as I'm known to kind of rail on Bendis from time to time, and I
do you really?
I do. But what What needs to happen with Justice League is what happened with the Avengers in Marvel. They need to make that the centerpiece book of the universe again.
And I think once the big three are back in the regular universe, they will. But, I mean, right now, you know, you got Bruce traveling through time, and you've got Clark dealing with New Krypton, and Wonder Woman is, you know, I don't know what the hell Wonder Woman is really. I mean, it's weird, because in her book, she's fine.
Gail's
doing great with it. Well, yeah, you know, you're a Wonder Woman.
Jenny,
you, exactly.
Yeah. All right, how is Wonder Woman these days?
I love Gail. I do. I love her. I think she's great. Well, actually, I guess I'm a little... I just realized as we're talking here, I'm like, I haven't really read any comics for a month. I didn't go...
Next.
That's okay. No, but
I didn't go buy my new comics this week. But I just think it's funny that, you know, I don't think that... I'm not positive this is correct or not, but I don't think it's lining up with the Blackest Night, and she's a... Sapphire Lantern?
Yeah. Right, right.
And then in the regular Wonder Woman series, she's fine. Is that correct?
Yeah. They're letting Gail tell her own story in her.
I got no problem with that.
So we'll just be like, well, this happened later.
Superman's a Black Lantern in Blackest Night, but he's still running around on
New Krypton. And that's okay. Did you read Blackest Night Wonder Woman? Because Rucka was writing it. And I think Rucka is a very good Wonder Woman writer.
Nicholas
Spencer. Yeah, she's fantastic. Oh, my God.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. Yeah, I have read, I think, is it a 4-issue miniseries?
It's three.
Okay, then I read it.
Yeah, you know, and I thought it was really fun. And again, I love what Gail does with Wonder Woman, but I also think Greg is an excellent, honestly, I think Heinberg, too. I honestly believe that really in the last 10 years, we've had excellent people writing Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And there was, again, good clarity to the character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are showing different shades of the character, but great stories. Unfortunately, Alan was, you know, busy with Grey's Anatomy, so things got late. And, you know, Greg got, you know, bit in the ass, I guess, because, you know, they had art changes and things like that. But I really loved what he did with the book before Alan, too.
I'm sorry, Jenny, but Wonder Woman has never really intrigued me as a character very much. But I'm now.
I'm leaving.
I'm now.
She looks so pissed off.
I'm going.
I heard the point in really.
Flip the table over. Oh, I almost did, though.
Like, damn. Do a Jake LaMotta, would you?
Excellent. Jenny's getting pissed. No, I'm actually going back and reading Greg's run in trade, and I'm enjoying it. The whole Gorgon arc with, you know, bringing Medusa back. Mm-hmm. It was very good.
Rags, unbelievable art, Rags Morales, mm-hmm. who I'm really looking forward to doing the first wave stuff coming up, all the pulp heroes coming back.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be good. Yeah. Kyle, what are you reading?
Mr. Bice.
What am I reading? You know, the one thing I wanted to bring up, and it's an older book that I just read in trade, was Winterman.
Awesome.
I think the trade came out a month or two ago. A
couple months ago, yeah, man. Great stuff.
I had to read it twice to figure out if I liked it. It's like, I think I liked that.
You know, it was one thing.
It's confusing as hell.
It is, but it's a beautiful book, and that
it's gorgeous.
Beautiful books, I think, kind of erase a lot of writing problems.
Jose Leon?
Jean-Paul.
Jean-Paul Leon.
Yeah,
you made him international. It's all right. That's fine.
Yeah. Jose Leon. Sure. He was a director.
He sounds foreign.
When he's in Mexico.
He did westerns. No.
But yeah, it was. You know, I read the singles when they came out, and they came out so sporadically that it was difficult to keep track of.
And number changes. It was 6 of 8, and then you know,
Kyle wrote it.
I looked at it right before I came, and I couldn't remember the guy's name. I'll go grab it later and look it up.
Someone that I. Come to mind, you know,
but anytime Leon is doing a book, I mean, it's like
And it was I'd heard on another podcast from Leon himself said that they had some issues, I think, with the writer about that series not coming to completion.
Interesting,
and it ended up ending earlier than it should have.
Yeah, because it was originally an 8-issue, and then it ended up being a 6-issue.
Yeah, yeah,
and it took like a year and a half. I remember it wasn't that long ago it wrapped up. I remember talking to Fraction like. 3.5 years ago, and him saying, "This is a really good book. Check it out."
Yeah,
it's an amazing book.
Describe it, because
it's sort of a noir, Cold War. It takes place in Russia and in America, but
with
mostly
the
in Russia.
Donnie Brasco.
Yeah, it's
Corky Park, actually.
A spy thriller. It's a noir. It's crime.
Little Red Sun Superman sprinkled in there.
Yeah. A little bit of superhero in there. It's
and Peter Milligan's Soviet Superman kind of story. I felt a little kinship to too, and I can't remember the name of that right now.
But yeah, amazing story, amazing art,
funny moments in it.
Great comedy.
In like a Pulp Fiction meets. Butch, it's all mashup. It's like Pulp Fiction meets Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
And it's definitely one of those books. Everybody says this about probably every book out there, but you could see this as a movie or possibly an HBO series. Like, it's got that feel to it.
Mm-hmm. It gets confusing because they change location, you know, locales a lot. They end up in New York and then back in Russia, and there's a lot of, you know, time flashbacks, mm-hmm. and really in-depth relationships for these people that are all part of this shutdown, you know, Russian, more kind of like a super soldier program.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's why I was thinking of that Peter Milligan Wildstorm or Vertigo series. I think it was Vertigo. Just from a year or two ago. C.P. Smith, I want to say, was the artist.
I'm not sure.
I can't remember the name of it. The Company or something like that?
The Program.
The Program. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I didn't read that. I remember looking at it. But
no, yeah. As soon as I started reading that, it made me feel, I'm like, oh, this is like Winterman in a very good way.
Yeah. Yeah. I do remember that. Yeah, it looks a lot like that and kind of reads like it, too.
I had a problem because I was reading Winterman and Luna Park at the same time and got really confused. It's like, wait, what book was that in?
Who's drawing what?
Russian gangster book.
Really dark.
Very dark. Right? Yeah. And the art is not that different.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, Luna Park is very good. So it was, I was doing like either reading or watching all of this Russian stuff, and I was having to.
Were you watching what's his face's Viggo Mortensen's movie as well?
You know, I thought of that when I was at Half Price Books today looking for stuff.
Eastern Promises.
Yeah, and I walked and I saw that on the shelf. It was like $5. I was like, I should buy this.
Have you seen that, Jenny?
Mm-mm.
Awesome, good crime movie.
What is it?
Eastern Promises. Okay. It's Viggo Mortensen and Naomi Watts. And Armin Mule, whatever his name is, three-name man, he was the father in Shine.
Okay.
And
the movie famous for the naked fight scene in the bathhouse.
Yeah.
Yes.
With Viggo.
And you see Viggo's junk? Yikes.
I'll be right back.
Brutal knife fight in a Russian bathhouse. And it's just like... here I am. I'm sounding like centrist. I keep name dropping. I had talked to Greg about...
you got me beat this episode.
I know. I'm all over the place. But Greg was talking about knife fights.
As he does.
We were talking about choreographed knife fights in movies, and he's just like, those do not happen. There are not choreographed knife fights. Knife fights are these, you know, brutal, just try and survive... fights and Eastern Promises. As soon as I saw that, I was like, "That's what he's talking about." Because it is brutal, and there's nothing dancy about this knife fight.
There's a package.
Oh yeah, and there's sweaty nakedness.
And it's really in a lot of ways like The Godfather is for Italian mob family films. This is a Russian mob family film. I mean, it's you get the hierarchy and the Fredo like kind of goof off son. But it's great. It's very, very cool.
I tell you, this is okay.
Although a little uglier than
People probably don't want to know this. I went to a Russian bathhouse about a month and a half ago. Beat the Chicago winners.
The hell is he doing here?
Get out
of here, Yankee.
It is kind of like that, but not really. And Marta texted me whenever I was leaving, and she's like, "Did you see anyone with stars on their knees?" And if you've seen Eastern Promises, you know that's they
made
tattoos are a big part of gangs in general, but like Russian gangs, they tattoo stars on their knees because they kneel before no one, and the stars on their on their chest means that they're a certain level in the it's crazy. But watch Eastern Promises.
Woody Woodpecker made something incredibly different in the Russian mob hierarchy as well. If you've got that tattoo.
It's a Woody.
Chris, never mind.
Did you go to the bathhouse over off the Blue Line? That old rundown one?
No. I passed that on my way.
That's a Turkish one. I've actually been in that one.
Sorry.
Have you ever seen any Gladiator movies too?
There's a really good Russian bathhouse on Cicero, just north of Addison.
Welcome to a round bathhouse. in Chicago.
As long as it's not in Boys Town.
It is not in Boys Town. If you go there,
not
you're probably the only person
speaking English. The bathhouse over there has a reputation.
So Jenny.
Yes, sir.
You said you haven't been reading anything in the last month or so, but what was the last thing that you did read that...
I have said this before, and I will say it every day of my life. Batwoman Detective Comics is amazing. Is amazing. Very good. J.H. Williams III is just fantastic. And I really liked his work on Promethea. I'm sorry.
Oh, absolutely.
There you go. I keep pushing myself away from the microphone. I loved his work on Promethea. I think that he is really good at using every different thing that is available, that comics makes available in terms of art and storytelling, and he just does it all.
To be as good as he is in every different style that he does, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's one thing to experiment, but to be proficient in all those styles, that's incredible.
I think that there are so many different things about comics, different ways that the material can be experienced that is not available in any other medium, or it is, but not all together like it is with comics, you know, the way with words and pictures and, you know, being able to manipulate panel and pacing and color and storytelling. And I think that J.H. Williams does an amazing job of manipulating so many different things that are available specifically with comic medium that it just blows my mind the way that he could tell, the way that he changed, you know, the panel sizes and, you know, the design than he did with the gutters and inside of the gutters, and the way that he changed the entire style of what he was drawing.
Whenever he went to the much more, you know, I'll call it the economy of line style, where he goes away from the really paint, almost, it really is almost a painted look. I mean,
it's an Alex Ross look. Let's name names. I mean, that's what it was. He was riffing on Alex Ross.
The pencils were so tight that that Dave Stewart was coloring over, and we can't forget Dave Stewart on this. But whenever he changed up style, it took me about half that first issue to go, oh my God, he's doing Mazzucchelli. This is Williams does Mazzucchelli.
And that was the exciting thing I thought, and it was something I brought up when I talked with Greg Rucka about the book, was during that origin portion of the story when the kidnapping is going on and the army breaks in to save Kate and Alice, when you were seeing those army scenes of the colonel back when he was a soldier, I felt like it was a very Joe Kubert thing. Mm-hmm. And literally, you felt like there was this joke at that moment of them stopping the kidnapping and fixing everything. You had this like moment of a Joe Kubert character rushing into a Dave Mazzucchelli scene. It was like Roger Rabbit, where all of a sudden it's like that figure doesn't belong in this scenario. And further, it supported the story because that's what was happening to Kate. Her safe world, her safe Mazzucchelli world, was being shattered by the event of the kidnapping and the saving of, you know, her dad coming in to save her.
And it's interesting that, you know, before that, all of the safeness that you're talking about just pretty much involved her mother and her sister and herself. And then all of a sudden, you know, the parts that had her father in them were dark.
Yes.
And not because her father was dark, but just it's interesting that he didn't introduce her father in any of those more comfortable and
happy
places.
No, it was a different world. And that's why these, like, it's George Costanza. Worlds are colliding.
There are so many comics out there that, you know, in this age of the movie option and, you know, what comics have kind of evolved into, that a lot of times, and it's not that it's bad, but I think that too often comics read as storyboards for, you know, a pitch for a movie, and it just seems to be a style that has kind of evolved, and that marriage of comics with TV and movie. And whenever you see someone like J.H. Williams or, you know, Jonathan Hickman, and, you know, there's, you know, all these other folks, the stuff that that Mike Costa was able to do as a writer with G.I. Joe Cobra, guys that really understand that comics
are made for its own medium. It's not,
it's for comics.
It's not trying to tell a story with a handicap. It's it's an entirely different way to tell a story, and you should take advantage of all of the things that it offers.
There's a really good series from Vertigo called Air.
Yep.
And I enjoy Air. My only beef with that book.
Can't live without it myself. Literally.
You get too much, you get too high.
You
not
mean
enough,
actually.
And you're gonna die.
Yes, I do. Love is like oxygen.
You
know, thank
you. A little sweet. The second sweet reference this week.
All right. Thank you.
But my only beef about that book is that in the flashbacks, the art didn't change. There was nothing. There was nothing in that book that signaled that this was a flashback or a different time. And unless you knew that or went back and reread it and said, oh, those parts are flashbacks, there was no color palette change, there was no change in artwork, there was nothing that signified that. That is, I don't want to call it inexperience on the artist's part, but I think that is not using the medium to its fullest.
Right.
And what J.H. Williams has done in Detective Comics is said, okay, there are these other parts of the story that are different in tone, they're different in feel, they're different in time, and we're going to use that.
His different styles. I thought it was really cool the way, you know, obviously speaking of the... her memories of her past and how she became who she was. But even the part, like the very first issue that had current time, where she was when she was Batwoman and where she was when she was Katie Kane.
Yeah.
Kate Kane.
Yeah.
Just the difference in style was astounding, but I thought it was obviously, you know, her world is much brighter and lighter when she is herself or when she is Kate Kane, and much darker when she's Batwoman. But I just thought it was so cool that it was more realistic when she was Batwoman. You know, like it was painterly and it was, you know.
That's true.
And a very heavy line when she was in
this is the real person rather than the guise of Kate Kane.
Yeah, she was, like the style, and like the monsters or animorphs, I don't know what to call them, the werewolf people and various things. even they were, you know, more like Wrightson-esque, you know, like very fluid lines and painterly, and I thought that was really cool. And then also how the things that they showed as calm and collected as they were about her past and how, you know, what she had seen when she was a child and then her coming out in the army and that whole situation and her reactions with her father and everything, and then her first meeting with Batman, and everything that came in between, they weren't spectacular. They weren't bizarre. They weren't like my normal reaction to superheroes is, okay, I have to suspend my reality.
It was realistic. These amazing subtle touches,
that
were so in character, because sometimes you can in comics or any media where it's like, okay, the writer wants to say this, and all of a sudden people can fall out of character.
Yeah.
And it's like
you're
hearing the author's
speech.
Voice.
Yeah. Here's the speech.
You're hearing the author's central voice. This was, and in the first recording of this, for everyone out there, because we've already talked about this once, Steve from the Comic Book Queers was talking about Kate's coming out, and I hadn't even thought of it, but he said that was the most
least
well
dramatic,
done,
yeah.
most well done, and most
real,
resonant genuine. Coming out that he had ever read. And he's a gay man.
It wasn't dramatic. There was no fight. There was no "you're not my daughter." There was no "we don't want you in the army." There was just we heard a rumor. You just deny it. And everything's fine. And she says, "Well, I can't deny it."
Mm-hmm.
And so
that
she,
goes against the code and everything that
and
I
so
believe.
And so she quits,
yeah.
essentially. Right. And then she goes home and she meets her father. And he asks why she's not at the army anymore. And she says, "You know, they had heard this rumor and I couldn't deny it." And he says, "Why couldn't you deny it?" And she said, "Well, because it would have been a lie." And he says, "That's fine. Okay." And she calls it, you know.
Yeah. And honestly, if I ever get into a don't ask, don't tell debate with someone, it's like, I want to Exhibit A, Detective Comics. This is why.
You're right. You know? And unlike other comics that I think have addressed the gay issue, it is the least preachy, and it is just very matter of fact, and it was handled in a very adult way,
and
it's a big relief.
The way that she reacts with her father, the way that they interact with each other is so, as you were saying, Chris, in the first taping of this, is so, army superior and inferior. Like, she calls him sir, she calls him the colonel, and, you know, and everything is stoic. It's so stoic.
Yeah.
But you
never ever doubt, not for one second, that they are not
father
and daughter, and that you know his sun and moon sets with his daughter now. That is his
that
wife.
That scene where he picks her up with her mother dead and her supposed sister covered up.
Yes.
The timing of that is amazing. It is like it is in slow motion. For lack of a better way to say, after we had the whole conversation about how comics is their own medium and should not be trying to be like a movie, but it is like a movie. I mean, like, I watched it and I could see it happen before my eyes in slow motion. It was beautiful. And then, you know, the same situation that we just talked about with her coming out to her father in, you know, the way that she did, I guess. It is loving. It's, you know, it is how I would assume a very loving relationship with somebody who was raised in the military by someone in the military would be. And
we talk about the relationship of this, you know, the colonel and the cadet, you know, this military thing that they do, and mm-hmm. that's their relationship. And if he had dropped character and said, "Oh, honey, you know what? If it just makes you happy, then I'm happy."
Yeah.
And instead he's like, soldier, you did your duty and you stood up for what you believed in. And they never broke from that for a second. I was like, yeah, okay.
These are people that live by the code, and the code still dictates their motivations and actions. Yeah. Absolutely.
And if there's a sticking of the landing, that was
exactly.
It.
Yeah. And then, the way that, you know, often superheroes become superheroes, you hear their, you know, their origin story, and you're just like, really? Because I don't think that's quite how I would have reacted. But when they showed, you know, each issue covered a part of her life and the mm-hmm. things that happened in between, and at the end of it, you know, I think if I had been through everything she'd been through, I think I would have become what she'd become.
Well, that's why, and I do think that J.H. has gotten his accolades for this book, and rightfully so. It's an incredible book, but what is the support and the foundation of this is Greg's story.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Chris and I give it up to Rucka all the time, and others do as well, but that's the thing. I really think these guys needed the time to draw that kind of story and write that kind of story. And the end result is a book that will stand the test of time.
It was clearly well planned. I mean, so often you get a book and you're like, it seems like they're writing it month to month. And this one, there was a story that they wanted to tell. They figured out the best way to tell it, and they found the best artist that could portray it.
Yep.
And really they had all their ducks in a row.
And the best writer, too, because Greg writes women well. He is an excellent writer of women. And it was, you know, they forced Batwoman on us because of the buzz of the news. They threw her into 52. And it was it was such a clumsy debut. And it really was just like, here she is. And you're like forcing her down your throat. And that character really could have been a misfire.
Yeah.
But luckily this story, now that it's, you know.
They nailed it.
Yeah, they totally nailed it. The only thing I would say is, and I kind of understand because the success has been so big. And it's so funny because DC won't, you know, keeps denying it. We're going to get a regular Batwoman monthly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's great news because Greg is going to be writing this. And obviously, I think J.H. will draw it as much as he possibly can. Mm-hmm. I don't know the full details on the art side. But I do think, again, when we're looking at Jock currently drawing the book,
a perfect artist to take over for J.H. Williams.
Yes.
There are two guys where I'm just like, okay. Designers, mm-hmm. they are comic book artists who are also designers. And whenever I think of J.H. Williams, I think of those beautifully designed pages. And Jock brings a level of layout and design.
Gorgeous.
That is just mm-hmm. unbelievable.
I haven't seen the trailer yet for The Losers. Have you guys seen it?
It's online. It looks awesome.
It looks great.
And I also hear that the casting must have been amazing because they literally look like Jock's design.
Looks awesome.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to see it.
I haven't read the book, but I just saw an ad for the first trade, the re-releasing it.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the trade and I was like, holy crap, these guys look exactly the same as the actors.
It looks awesome. It is.
That's awesome.
Imagine just a 2000s version of every great government action, dark, you know, black op conspiracy meets the A-Team. And that is The Losers. It looks awesome.
And really, I guess, you know, the word is the reason why they're pushing the release date to the summer is they're like, holy shit, we got a good movie here. We
got a summer blockbuster.
Yeah, we don't have to put it in the summertime or in the spring when, you know, the audiences are down. It's good enough to really compete on the summer playing field, which is fantastic. And one of the reasons why I bring it up is because I want to mention two things. You know, the TV show for The Human Target is out there. Really, of the early 2000s, The Losers and the Vertigo Human Target were my two favorite Vertigo series.
Pete Mulligan's. I'm reading it right now.
It was incredible. And I'm so sorry, because sometimes when I do come on Around Comics, I feel like I'm giving rebuttals to some things I hear on 11 o'clock.
That's fine.
Comics.
It's all big ones and, when you're one big family.
Well, no, exactly. I know.
In six episodes of this, if you want to hear more of me, you got to go
exactly.
Over
that's the place to go. It's 11 o'clock comics. Yeah. So, but I heard you mention this new Human Target series that's based on the TV show.
Did you like it?
I did, and I'll tell you why. I completely agree with you. For fans of the Peter Milligan Vertigo series, you will be disappointed because this is a much more simpler character, much like the television series is. The good news is if you've got the ancient history that my gray hair and reading and my weary eyes have, reading The Human Target literally since it came out in the 70s, this is the Christopher Chance that Len Wein and Carmine Infantino and Dick Giordano gave us originally. And it's just a very simple action book. And it's unapologetically so, much like the television series.
I love Len Wein. I mean, he's the guy is responsible for Wolverine.
Sure.
Among a lot of other great things. I wanted to like the Human Target comic, the new one, sure. so much. But
what was missing for you? That's what I didn't hear when you were critiquing it.
It felt like a bad, discarded episode pitch for the TV show. It seems like they're going out of their... Okay, everything that we just said about Detective Comics,
yes.
it hit the beats, it didn't feel forced, everything was in character. It's like that, it just felt right. I read this, and it's not that it's bad. It's not that it's bad, but the story, it doesn't have what it needs to have. It's like they're creating this ridiculous scavenger hunt story that doesn't really make sense to me. It doesn't feel like a really good script.
For me, it was an action romp that was self-contained, which was nice.
Some good character moments.
I think very good character moments that tie in again with the series. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to scratch you. If you are a fan of the Fox series, I think you will be pleased. If you are a fan of the idiosyncrasies of the Vertigo series, you will be disappointed because that is a much more complex Christopher Chance.
It's different. Yeah, they couldn't have done that on TV.
Yes, there's a much more... And also, the Master of Disguise thing would be very hokey if they tried it on TV, like they used to try it in the 70s, and like they did with the Rick Springfield Human Target back
where
in
all
the
of a sudden,
late 80s, early 90s.
Where he looks exactly like the other guy because it is the other guy, and then all of a sudden it cuts scenes, and then it's a really
rubber mask.
Yeah, it's a really bad rubber mask.
It's the Mission Impossible thing. It's Martin Landau in a bad rubber mask. Exactly.
Yeah. But the first issue, it once again, not bad. I just felt like the story a little weak.
Okay.
It's like, come on. You could have done something really cool. I just feel like it's a very contrived story.
This is catering to the television audience, which I can't blame them. The good news is
dumb.
But the good news is,
that's what I heard.
It is. It's a meat and potatoes action story. I kind of liked it. I thought it was fine. But I always liked that version of Chris Chance anyway.
Great Chris Sprouse art in the backup.
Absolutely. I love Chris Sprouse.
The backup story was a hoot.
The good news, by the way, though, is, and I know you mentioned this also in 11 O'Clock Comics, they are re-releasing the Vertigo stuff. Absolutely go out and check it out.
From
the miniseries to the original graphic novel, the final cut, and then on to the regular series, which lasted 30 issues. Yes, Edwin Bukovic and Javier Pulido did the art. Peter Milligan wrote the story. Wonderful covers from Tim Bradstreet. Mm-hmm. And it continued in the regular Vertigo series. Seek this series out. It is one of the best things that came out in the early 2000s.
It's sweet.
Cool.
It's incredible. It is. It's very complex.
I have it.
Yeah.
But, okay. But honestly, if you're just looking for a very straightforward action story, and I have been lately. I even bought that crappy, and it was good. I had no interest. I can't remember who the country star is supposed to be. But it's from 12 Gauge, and it was a good story, and it has awesome art from New Orleans, Cody Chamberlain.
Oh, okay, sure.
And it's beautiful, but I can't remember. But it was just a straight up kind of Western,
is it
like
Reba
modern
McEntire?
Western. No, but it's a male version of Reba McEntire. I don't know. But
hey, the best
Bashington. I can't remember what his name was.
The best
is
just kind of like fun action romp book I've read in the last couple of years. The Highwayman from Wildstorm.
Yeah. That was great. Or even when Cobb that Bo Smith did with. With the guy who's unfortunately sick right now, and God, I'm blanking. Oh God, Barreto. Eduardo Barreto and everything.
Yeah, that's he did the art for Andy's Union Station.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Cobb was like that too. I like straight up action, and that to me is what Human Target represents. So I would say if you're just looking for, no superheroes, just kind of fun action with, an action adventure kind of hero and stuff, I think this is what you want.
Cool. All right, well, before we wrap up here, I want to remind everyone about this amazing convention that is coming to downtown Chicago. That's right. For the first time in over two decades, a national comics and entertainment convention is coming to downtown Chicago. Make your plans now to attend C2E2, the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, this April 16th through the 18th. Join thousands of comic book fans, creators, and celebrities for a weekend of fun and excitement in the city of broad shoulders. Special guests at this year's show include Alex Ross, Jeff Smith, Jeff Johns, Mike Mignola, Ethan Van Sciver, Gail Simone, Mark Waid, Jenny Frizzin, Kyle Bice.
Yeah. Awesome.
and hundreds more of your
literally,
favorite creators.
Literally guests. Hundreds more. I understand that over 300 creators will be in Artist Alley.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The huge. Largest.
The largest.
Actually, Mark Fitch from Reed and C2E2 was just here. We sat down with him. We had some audio problems and lost some audio. So we'll recap a little bit of that. But yeah, he said it's going to be the largest Artist Alley.
Another thing that he said I think is probably important is that their intention was not to... make a con and try to sell it to Chicago, but to try to create the con that Chicago wanted to have.
Which is why they keep coming back to Chicago and talking to the stores and creators and the fans and saying, what do you guys want with this show? Mm-hmm. And also to really create its own identity separate from the excellent New York show that they've been putting out in the last couple
of
years.
And he said, and unfortunately you lost it, he and a couple of the other, Kim Mueller and one other person took most of the Artist Alley people out last night for drinks.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And mothers.
And mothers down at Russian Division. Said, have some free drinks on us and let's get some ideas.
Let's go to the bar that broke up Rob Lowe and Demi Moore in that one movie.
Oh, about last night.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mothers.
David Mamet, classic, man. Sexual Perversity in Chicago. That was the play. Carl Sandburg wrote that.
Carl Sandburg wrote it. Tickets for the show are only $25 for a one-day pass. So if you want to come in, if you're here in the Chicago area, you want to make it in for Friday or Saturday or just Sunday, you can do that for $25. Sunday, by the way, kids 15 and under?
15 and under, which is...
Did he say 15?
Yeah, how about
15?
That?
Yeah,
he said 15.
Wow. He said 15 and under
with a paid admission.
Free pass?
get it free on Sunday.
That was not your best.
Wait, I think Hank can go, right?
Yeah. Hank will be my 15-year-old.
My son Hank.
And it's $50 for the entire weekend. For a full list of guests, events, and to purchase tickets, visit C2E2.com.
But wait, there's more.
C2E2 and Around Comics, iFanboy, Wordblend, and Tom vs. The Flash are all giving you a chance to win tickets and exclusive C2E2 merchandise before the big weekend. We'll be giving away one amazing VIP package, 3 weekend passes, 5 exclusive C2E2 posters signed by creator and guest of honor Alex Ross.
Did you see the poster?
That's awesome.
That's crazy, nice looking
man. It absolutely represents
that is Chicago.
Heroic Age and Chicago. It's literally beautiful profile shots of Iron Man, Thor, and the Hulk all in a line.
And the Chicago skyline reflected in Iron Man's armor.
Gorgeous. That's awesome. Alex Ross poster. It really is incredible.
Sweet. The city of broad shoulders? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, the city of broad shoulders. The hog butcher to the world, Jenny.
That also.
Are we not the Windy City anymore?
We are that too. We're the second city. Okay. Hey,
AJ Liebling.
Oh, is it?
Okay. That's who coined the city.
You know why it's called the second city?
Yeah, because of New York.
No. You just lost your Chicago street cred.
You tell me yours and I'll correct you. Because the reason why it's called the
gauntlet has been thrown down.
The first one burnt down.
Oh, yeah.
It's called the Windy City because of the politics.
No, the second city. It's called the second city because the first one burned down.
Because A.J. Liebling called it the second city because it had an inferiority complex with New York, and I found that very funny.
Well, fuck him.
Wow. Oh, he was awesome. Great writer.
All right.
Very 15, funny. 15, I believe you, though.
And 15 limited edition C2E2 shirts, and also your chance to win lunch with a Marvel editor. Entering the contest is easy. Just visit www.c2e2.com/aroundcomics. Enter your name and email. That is all it takes. We'll be drawing winners from all entries on March 19th. Stay tuned for more exciting news about our official C2E2 after parties.
It's gonna be a blast.
And more ways to win tickets and exclusive merchandise by following C2E2 on Twitter at C2E2.
No, this is going to be a great show.
Everyone's going to be fun.
And also, perfect timing because of all the announcements that have been happening in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And I, that's the other thing that Mark mentioned was that clearly Chicago is back on the calendar of in terms of breaking news, and it's I would guarantee that a lot of big news will be broken here.
You know, San Diego is always, I think, you know, going to be the big convention, and that's fine because it is so much more than just comics, and mm-hmm. it's good to be the big show. And I think New York, with its rich comics history, and obviously the size of the metro area, regionally, mm-hmm. New York should have a huge comic show. But Chicago has a rich comic history too, and I think that having them scheduled where they are, where it's C2E2 in April, it's San Diego in July, and then New York at the end of the year, and mm-hmm. in October, you have these great, these three, tent posts of conventions, mm-hmm. right. and then you have all the other great regional shows to fill in between and do what they do best. Places like Emerald City Comic Con and Heroes and all of the great regional shows out there. But Chicago, I'm proud, and I'm obviously biased, but Chicago needs to be one of those tent post convention mm-hmm. stops.
The great thing about being in the spring too is one thing that Mark mentioned, they're still keeping things quiet in terms of what kind of media and Hollywood presence mm-hmm. there will be beyond the comics, but obviously with it being just 2 weeks before the premiere of Iron Man 2, there's going to be a lot of Iron Man related Marvel stuff going on, so that's another reason to come out.
I think they're auctioning off an Iron Man. We should get working.
It. Should we like chip in and like buy a suit of armor?
Working.
Awesome?
I don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want the boots or the gloves. I either want to fly or blow up stuff.
It's all going to be on auction.
Nice.
And so is Scarlett Johansson.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Really? Yay. Wow. That's like that Robot Chicken episode. Can I be the geek that like buys Scarlett Johansson?
Yay, how's it going?
Well, the other thing, of course, is that is going to be the big blowout party to say farewell to this year's show.
Yeah,
so come on town, come on into town and have fun with us as we say goodbye to Around Comics. All right. I tell you what, we've got about 10 minutes left. Do we want real quickly here to talk about the big news in at DC?
We do want that.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so much talk about it on the internet. I don't think that we need to spend a tremendous amount of time on it, but kind of our initial thoughts, because quite honestly, we don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
There were big announcements out of DC this week in regards to their executive hierarchy at DC Entertainment, especially in regards to the comic book division. I don't even know if they call it the comic book division anymore or what they call it. But John, you've been obviously with your folks over at Newsarama have been pretty tied into this, and even have talked to some of the folks involved with it. Go ahead and break down if you would for us what's going on at DC.
The three big names at the top obviously are they've decided what they're going to do with the publishing role that was occupied by Paul Levitz. He steps down. Dan DiDio moves up to co-publisher with Jim Lee. And that was an interesting thing
That's quite a promotion for Dan.
Well, it is.
And Jim.
Yeah, matter as well. Exactly. I mean, going from owning Wildstorm to going into business with DC to suddenly running DC, that's kind of interesting. And then Jeff Johns is the chief creative officer.
Mm-hmm.
And
CCO.
And it sounds like he, as it was described in the thing, he will be, all three of them will be dealing with the big picture. The way they're splitting up the publishing role is Dan will be handling the day-to-day stuff, and Jim will be a liaison to the digital end, not only in terms of digital comics, but also gaming, movies, television. Jeff will also play a role in that as well. Jeff will still write.
It's like people have talked about with the hold up on All-Star Batman and Robin.
Right.
Now, Jim Lee's been working on the DC.
MMO.
I think that has taken up a tremendous amount of his
time. And that's the thing, because I think people were wondering how it will affect both Jeff and Jim's creative work. It sounds like Jeff is right away saying, "No, I'm still going to be writing comics. He'll still be writing Brightest Day. He'll still be writing Flash. He'll be writing
Green Lantern.
The Aquaman mini has already been announced.
Yep.
So I think Jeff will always have a big hand in what's going on.
He's just not going to be writing 12 titles like he does now.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But they also compared
every single title.
They kind of compared it to what he's been doing with the Blackest Night event in mm-hmm. terms of,
set the
guiding.
Stage.
Yeah,
what
but
he
also
with Superman too.
But also with JT. Yes, that's true. But also like, talking to guys like JT Krul and Greg Rucka who were doing these miniseries mm-hmm. and saying, these beats need to happen. Go write your story.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's a great role for Jeff. I also think that the good news is that, you know, it is the synergy that I think everyone has been crying for, and seeing more connection with Time Warner and getting a lot of these great properties exploited in the way that, yeah. you know, worked out so well for Batman. So this is yeah. all win-win. The big mystery is what's going to happen with Dan's old position as far as executive editor. And right now, that's all still being worked out, that all the editors are kind of talking. And I'm sure we'll hear some very interesting decisions of who will be running the Batman titles, the Superman titles, mm-hmm. et cetera.
One big question I think a lot of people had, what happens to Karen Berger now?
They addressed that, actually, and they said the good news, and well, some people I think were disappointed that she wasn't going to get a more active role, mm-hmm. but I think Vertigo is still its own animal, yeah. and as evidenced by things like The Losers coming out, let's see what happens with The Losers movie, because I don't think Diane Peters, who's running the big mm-hmm. show for DC Entertainment, is going to ignore Karen, and I'm sure is going to be watching how some of the Vertigo things get exploited. She's got a great eye for, as we all know, talent and what would work for stories, and I think the things that Vertigo is doing in the last 2 years as compared to its history have all been interesting moves. Things like Air mm-hmm. and all the different new series that have been
yeah.
coming out.
Yeah.
And the same goes with the inventiveness of Wildstorm. Everyone always credits Jim Lee for coming up with Wildcats and the various characters he did. But I would also point to those books that flew under the radar. Welcome to Tranquility. Perfect mm-hmm. example.
Yep.
All those books that weren't being written by Grant Morrison or drawn by Jim Lee.
The Highwayman.
There you go.
Winterman.
Winterman.
Winterman. Exactly. No, that's the thing. So all of Warren Ellis's...
Mysterious the Unfathomable.
Exactly. Yeah. Red, you know, all those Warren Ellis miniseries from the early yeah. 2000s and stuff, all that stuff came from Wildstorm. So I think there's a good mix of creative ideas, and it wouldn't, again, fine. You know, Karen may not be involved with the DCU proper. Yeah. She's still taking on her corner of Vertigo, and I think everything's in good hands.
It'll be interesting. You mentioned the executive editor position for DC because, you know, Karen, you know, I don't know if a lot of – everyone points at Dan DiDio saying, oh, Dan is the guy at DC. Well, Karen Berger was very much on the
– They're equals.
Yeah, they're equal. Yes. Were. I mean,
well, they were equals, yes. Now Dan's
– He's co-publisher.
Right,
now,
right, so. Exactly. But I do think that, yeah, I mean, no, anytime someone would say, hey, can't we get Swamp Thing back in the DCU – Dan's answer was, no, I'm sorry, that's Karen's character now.
Yeah.
And it is those kinds of things of, no, that belongs to Vertigo now. That used to be DCU, but you can't think of it that way anymore. Same with Constantine, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, what do you guys think of the news that you've heard so far?
I'm excited. I mean, I'm interested to see how it goes, and I think it's kind of interesting to have co-publishers. I don't know. Has that been a thing before?
No, but, again, it sounds like they've divided the responsibilities clearly in that Jim is...
Digital. Yeah. Well, it's just sort of interesting to have two creative minds
The Jim Lee move, I think, is really important because... He is already going in that direction. He was doing a lot of the multimedia, a lot of the gaming stuff.
Exactly.
And to actually give him a title and put him in charge of some of this stuff, I think is pretty smart on their part.
Mm-hmm. Same goes with Jeff, too. I mean, that's the thing. You know, yeah. Jeff is going to be very involved with the television animation. And film. Yeah. And he already has been.
Well, it's kind of funny to see kind of the dry run that he did, you know, with Smallville, JSA, and, you know, he's been involved with Green Lantern.
He's written a treatment for The Flash, and he's one of the co-producers in The Flash film. He wrote a treatment for Shazam. He's also written a treatment for The Metal Men. I mean,
really?
That's the thing. Yeah, Jeff very quietly, while he's been writing the comics, has also been doing this film and TV work as well. His show running on Blade, which granted only made it the one season, but I really think by the end of the season, that show finally kind of found its footing. It was too bad that Spike... Yeah. You know, axed it. But that's the thing. You know, Jeff started with Richard Donner and came from television and film to begin with, and more so film, obviously, with Donner. But I think the cool thing is, too, this is something that fans have been wanting.
Can we clone him?
Well, I think the good news is I think we're getting a lot of friends of Jeff writing books and that agree with Jeff's philosophy.
We kicked off the episode talking about Supergirl, and that Sterling Gates is I think, very much a Jeff Johns protege.
Yeah, it was in a lot of the same ways that I think, you know, Marvel has had, like, parent writer to co-writer and stuff. I think Jeff, you know, gave that relationship to Sterling as well, and now Sterling is writing very good books on his own.
I think we're about to see DC's answer to Marvel's movies. You know, Marvel kind of dominated the movies for the past couple years, and now putting Jeff in this position...
Yeah, I definitely. And also, it's something that the fans have been asking for, and I think that's important to point
outside of the Batman franchise.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, literally, you've gotten that kind of, Jeff Judge, just write everything. And like you even just said, like, can we clone him and everything? Well, we got the next best thing. He has got an active role where he is actually running the store.
Yeah.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. And also, it will be very interesting to see what is announced as the years come and months ahead, because they're all like, hey, we're not ignoring digital comics. We have a plan. We're just trying to figure it out. And again, Jim Lee is a guy that's very involved in that. So I think very interesting things are happening.
I think DC has a very interesting TV opportunity, because Smallville's not going to last much longer.
No.
I think next season, Tom Welling's going to be 40 pretty soon.
No shit. he's like 32 and he looks like he's 32. He's not Smallville. He's not the farm boy.
With the success of Smallville, I mean, a 10 year run?
Yeah, it'll
year
be,
run,
next year will be 10 years?
There's gonna be a void left there that I think that DC is going to bring, be able to bring something else. And you can bet your bottom dollar that Jeff Johns is going to be involved in that.
I vote for Gotham Central.
Oh, me too. We were talking. Gotham Central would be so good with it,
as you well know. It was in development.
Birds of Prey, if you remember that.
That's what I was saying.
Birds of Prey fucked over so many possible TV projects. It was like, this show, ratings-wise, stunk so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, Gotham Central was being seriously talked about, but after that, like CW or WB, whatever it was, it's like, we're not doing another Batman-themed show for a long time.
Did you guys all see Absolute Justice, the Smallville episode with the JSA?
It was awesome.
It really was. I mean, I'll admit, some of the dialogue was a little ham-fisted, and it was a little over the top, but only in the same purview as Smallville.
There's a dude wearing a hawk costume.
Yeah, it's tough to make the Hawkman suit look realistic. And Michael Shanks, I'm a big fan of his, and I thought his characterization of Carter Hall was very good.
That's the one reason I didn't watch it, actually.
Really?
Well, I saw a still of the episode online, and it was Hawkman.
It worked.
And the still, and maybe it was just how they caught it, that actual moment, but it looked like plastic, and I was just like, oh, this is
good. The good news, though, was to counterbalance that, Dr. Fate. It was a great take on Dr. Fate.
Really?
Absolutely. It was, it was a cross between what you normally get from Dr. Fate, plus the paranoia and the schizophrenia that John Jones was showing in Kingdom Come, where it was Kent Nelson is a damaged guy, and he only has his shit together when he puts the helmet on, because when he has it off, the helmet is constantly whispering at him and making him crazy. And it was
shut up.
Really, it was really neat. You sound me? Get my
no, no, no. The helmet.
Put your helmet on.
Not at all. That's why you're here, John.
Put on your Sundress helmet.
Exactly. That's like Dr. Sundress. Tell you about 1950s westerns.
where to begin? Well, of course, Anthony Mann was your finest director, as Hank, I'm sure.
I did think it was really, it was kind of funny, because it's like, okay, John's being a comic book writer. It's like the big battle at the scene, or the battle scene at the end. It was like, okay, he wrote this as a comic book battle, and I'm sure at some point they got, okay, we don't have the budget for this. This whole scene is going to be in slow motion.
But again, what I think is interesting is compare the writing of Smallville and the few Easter eggs we got before the new producers took over. I think does point to the fact, as you said, Kyle, I think that the good news is we are going to have more synergy between the television and film side with the comic books, because it's very clear they listened to Jeff.
Yeah.
They liked what Jeff did last year on the Legion, and it succeeded, and that's what made this 2-hour film pop. And that's another thing you got to remember. It wasn't just an hour like last year. This is 2 hours.
Yeah.
I really think they get it. I think they finally get it. And also because of the success of Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I mean, you have David Goyer, who was right there in the trenches writing comics, writing Batman and stuff. They are listening. They know what makes these characters
good.
And
as much as I hate to say it, because I don't think the TV show is necessarily that good, but Heroes has shown that there is a mainstream audience out there for this.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, I agree with that when it was done right.
And I want to continue that conversation next week, because I want to talk to you about how viable a show like Gotham Central could actually be.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's wrap this puppy up.
Ooh, good cliffhanger for next week.
Yeah.
For the folks listening.
If you would like to email the show, you certainly can by emailing us at info@aroundcomics.com. If you would like to leave a voicemail, I think we do have some voicemails for next week, you can do so by calling 1-888-977-5903. Jenny Frizen, for people to find your work online.
I'm on jennyfrizen.com. And I'm on jfrizen.deviantart.com.
Are you Twittering yet, my friend?
I'm not.
Okay. Good for you.
I'm frightened. Come on. I finally caved to Facebook. Find me on Facebook and we can be pals. And then I will tell my boyfriend that I have more friends than him. And I will feel superior.
Well, get on the Twitter and
join the three of us.
Exactly. Because you can follow John at
John Word Balloon.
And you can find the podcast at
wordballoon.com.
You can follow me at C. Neesman. You can follow Around Comics at Around Comics. You can follow Tom at Tom Caters. And Kyle?
KyleBice.com. I'm on Twitter as well, but I spell my name with an I. So it's Kyle, K-I-L-E, B-Y-C-E.
Yes.
If I may also, I just want to say, because it'll be out the same week as this episode of Around Comics, check out the latest edition of Word Balloon, because I'll have Art Balthazar, Franco Aureliani, Mike Norton.
Our new team on the power of Shazam.
And it is so nice to have a Shazam book that will be an all-ages book, but not a Johnny DC book, an all-ages Shazam book that I think is inclusive to everyone.
Yeah.
And it's...
I've seen a lot of the art for this, and it looks beautiful. Awesome.
I knew you kids did.
I don't think it's appropriate for me to curse right after you said all ages, but it's effing sweet.
But no, I really, honestly, I think these three guys have figured out what makes Captain Marvel and the whole Shazam family great.
Nice, definitely. Nice.
Oh, and a real quick shout out to Jeff Johns and Art and Franco.
Wonderful issue of Tiny Titans number 7.
Hilarious. So good.
Very cute. Very, very cute.
So many just like little winks and nods to comic, but you know, us adult comic book fans about those characters. You know, giving Connor crap about his clothes, and it's like jeans and a t-shirt. It's comfortable. So, it was great. It's a Superboy return. Okay, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back again next Monday to continue our TV conversation and talk about more comics and voicemails and all that. In the meantime,
in between time,
thank you, Kyle. We'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production. Copyright 2010. Ooh, yeah.